This is Dylan.
This is Nick. And you're listening to
Colloquium, Colloquium.
Hey, Nick. Happy day before Valentine's Day.
Oh, yeah. Great. Is that how we're treating this Sunday now?
Yeah.
The day before Valentine's
Day.
Go ahead.
Super Bowl Sunday.
Super Bowl Sunday.
I don't know what's the higher feast, the day before Valentine's Day or Super Bowl Sunday?
Yeah, fair enough. Probably Valentine's Day, I had to say.
But yeah, the day before. It's not even the eve yet.
So. That's right, yeah. We, Zach, my brother, was joking earlier this morning that we moved our confirmation class to this morning. We usually have it on Sunday evening because of the Super Bowl. And he was carrying on about how, we've got to move our church obligations so that we can watch the Super Bowl on Sunday evening. Yeah.
I think that might tell you a little bit about our cultural priorities in America. Yeah.
It's fine as long as we don't cancel it for the Super Bowl. You know what I mean? I think it's probably okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fair. But it does tell you something about our priorities, I think.
Indeed.
All right. Well, speaking of Super Bowls, I don't have a segue into our topic.
I just wonder where you're going with that.
Yeah, I didn't know either. But today we're going to talk about living locally.
Yeah. Yeah, this is something that I think me and you have been thinking and praying about individually and together over the past little bit here. We're excited about it.
Yeah, in fact, I think we were really tempted to just start talking about it in our last podcast.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, and we had to kind of curtail it. So we're going to actually do it. We're going to do a whole episode on this, living locally. You know, I think there's... I think there is an emphasis on local in the culture as we get into a more globalized society. You know, it's like buy local, eat local, shop local, whatever, right? And I think we want to approach this from just generically living locally, living in your community locally. So I guess, maybe we'll just start with what do we mean by this? What do we mean by live local or local community?
Yeah. This was kind of a hard one, I think, for us to define, but I think what we mean by living locally is, one, being present. You know, a lot of times in my time here in Huntsville, especially since I've moved back as an adult, I tend to think of my life as like looking forward to the next big thing, like the next big vacation or the next trip away from my local community or the next exciting adventure or whatever away from the community. And I've been coming to realize over the past several months or so that there's actually a beauty to, being present in the community, and finding your rest there and getting to know people there. And,
right.
Just being excited about the present is, I think, an important part of living locally.
Yeah, I think I think of a couple of things. Like if you ever have a friend or a family member who's just like out of town a lot. Who, maybe it's like every weekend they're going somewhere. And I think we've all been in seasons of our life where it feels hard to be present to, the community you live in. But there's like something missing there, right? It's like this, I want this person to be more consistently a part of the community, more consistently present. And so I think that, and I think with the globalized world, and we'll talk about COVID, I'm sure, and technology and just how it's globalized us more and more, but it seems this globalization in connecting us with people farther and farther away, it disconnects us with the people right in front of us. And I think this theme of living locally or local community for us, I think, is a call to return to being present to the people we interact with on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, we could talk about, I think, like what that looks like, and I think we will here as we go along in this conversation. But I remember a story just came to my mind. It was probably a year ago. I was still living in my apartment complex, and the guy came by who he was the census guy. He came by to see who was living there and how many people were living there, whatever. He knocked on my door and said, "Hey, is it just you that lives there?" I was like, "Yeah." It's like, "Hey, do you know the person next to you? Like, do you know who lives there?" Mm-hmm. And I've been living there for a good year at this point, maybe.
Yeah.
And I said, "No, I don't know. I haven't really seen anybody go through that door or like walk in that door or out, and I don't know who it is." And I remember he looked at me and was like, "You guys don't know your neighbors here?" He was like, wow. He was like really disgusted with me. And he like kind of did that laugh thing, you know, that little chuckle where it's like, wow, I can't believe you don't know who lives next to you. And I was like, oh.
Wow.
So I think that's a perfect example of how I wasn't living locally. You know, just that's a basic thing we can talk about is like getting to know your neighbors would be a great way to live. Yeah. What we mean by living locally, you know, on a deep level. So anyway, it was just a story that came to my mind.
That can be a convicting thing. It's crazy to think that you can spend literally, you know, the majority of your life within 50 feet of somebody, right? Like, you know, you're spending at least sleeping plus, you know, any other time you spend at home, you're spending a good chunk of your life, probably more than half, right? Really close to somebody physically and then not even knowing them or knowing who they are, even knowing their name, right? That's wild.
Yeah.
It's wild to think that we live in that kind of society. And I don't want to chalk it all up to, oh, you know, the 21st century. I'm sure there's always been problems with people kind of not knowing their neighbors as well as they should, but I think there's no doubt that that's been made worse by technology and, well, at least technology for one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think so. I don't know. With this, I think of also stability. So one thing I have found that's been a fruit, and, you know, I've lived in the same place now for 3 years, which is probably the most stability I've had since growing up. Because in college, you know, I lived in the same place for 4 years, but or the same, you know, city at least. But, you know, I'd go home for summers and breaks. It wasn't necessarily all that stable, right? And then I lived, you know, 2 years in Colorado. But even then, it was an academic calendar with Focus Ministry. And so I was going home a lot, traveling a lot. It was not like really planted down as much as maybe I could have been. But for the last 3 years or so, I've been pretty, you know, settled in a specific community in a specific city year round, right? And so I found a fruit, you know, for the first time, really for the first time in my adult life, that I've been able to live this kind of, dare I say, virtue of stability, that, and we'll get into, you know, the Catholic roots of this, but, you know, the Benedictines, for example, take a vow of stability, and there is something beautiful and Catholic and Christian about having that stability, but I don't want to jump ahead too much. Let's look at, before we go there, let's look at what is, you know, how has this been made difficult in recent years? What makes this so hard to do, to live locally?
Yeah, obviously COVID. I mean, the past couple of years have been really just extremely difficult for people across various backgrounds of, you know, getting on Zoom calls instead of getting together in person, and even the mask thing and the distancing just drives us away from our local community, you know, drives us away from real face-to-face encounters and depth of knowing and being known.
Yeah.
So that's been a hard thing. I think that really has brought this question into the light of, or into the forefront of a lot of people's minds, even if they don't call it that. You know, I think that's what we're discussing here is how to increase the knowing and being known amongst our communities. Yeah. And that's been tough in recent years because of COVID.
Yeah. I remember about 2 years ago, I don't know why this came to mind, but a little less than 2 years ago, at the beginning of the pandemic, there was Luke Combs, who's a country singer, released a song called 6 Feet Apart.
Okay.
And basically the theme of this song is like, I can't wait till we're not all 6 feet apart, like physically, you know, so distant from each other. And I think there's actually a number of pop songs that have been written in the past couple years just about this experience of division and of separation from people close to us that it's been so much a part of our life. And I think that we've seen that technology can, you know, in its attempt to unite us, doesn't quite suffice.
Right.
I think everybody knows that a Zoom, a FaceTime meeting just isn't the same as spending time with somebody in person.
Yeah, and also too, just things like, you know, texting and being on social media and things like that. They tend to move us away from our local communities because all of a sudden you can have a conversation with someone across the world on Facebook or Instagram, or, you know, you can text people that you met from other cities and, you know, and call and have relationships with them instead. You know, if you're not quote unquote finding who you want to hang out with in your local community. You can just revert to that. So there's just an outlet from, there's a way to step away from your local community if you want, even if you're there, can be really detrimental to local community.
So I think before we talk too much about what to do about it, I want to establish, like, why is this a problem, right? What is it? What is it that's Catholic? What is it about our faith that makes local community an important thing for us?
Yeah. So I just mentioned this, but there seems to be such a powerful way of knowing and being known in the midst of a local community. It's hard to kind of pinpoint or flesh out, but just the face-to-face everyday encounters, seeing people in normal day-to-day routines, seeing them day in and day out at, you know, entertainment events or social functions or at work, or, you know, you just really get to know people at a depth and a breadth that you wouldn't in other places. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think with that too, like, I think, you know, with the incarnation of Christ, right? Like, there is a, you know, in some sense, a separation between God and man, and then Christ bridges that gap. God bridges that gap by becoming man and living amongst us, right? And the sacraments continue that incarnational reality, right? We get to be physically close to Jesus, and we're called to incarnationally evangelize, to borrow a term from Focus, right? And that means live life with people. Right? In Focus, we talked about that. Like, if you're trying to reach out to students and share the gospel with them, right? You take on their life. You go play basketball with them if they like to play basketball. You, you know, you've talked about your missionary who would come to your intramural games, right? You gotta, some of the phrases out there, smell like the sheep, right? You gotta go take on, be incarnational, take on their life and live life with them. And I think that's how we imitate God and imitate Christ and what he does for us. So I think that's at the heart of our faith, right? And that's why the sacraments are so good. That's why this personal, even encountering Christ through others, is so important, because we need this local in-person interaction, I think.
Yeah. There's kind of there's a sense in which in your local community, you really just can't hide from people either. I know we've talked about nakedness before in our podcast way back in the day, but there's a sense in which, like, they know you on a level that you might not be comfortable with, the people in your local community. And that's a good thing, to have people that know you in a way that you can't hide from them.
Right. And one of the things I find is that, like, the more connected we are, the more we can see others with their human dignity. And, like, I've been thinking about this time and time again. When I just experience somebody or, like, encounter them from a distance and they're not a deep part of my life, but I see their flaws and see their sins, it's easy to see them as, like, an enemy.
Yeah.
Right? To see them as, like, oh, they've got all this stuff going on. But I think it's when we really encounter people and live with them that actually we do see the worst of them, but we also see the best of them, right? We see that sometimes they're not as bad as we might think. And we begin to see their human dignity. And that's, you know, not always, sometimes that's easier said than done. Living close to people, you do see the worst as well. But I think you see the worst in context, right? You see it in the context of the whole person. And sometimes it takes really getting to know somebody and living life with them in order to see that.
Yeah.
And then the last principle I think we need to touch on, and this really does branch off of our subsidiarity conversation. So we had an episode on subsidiarity and solidarity, which are two principles of Catholic social teaching. But it is a principle of Catholic social teaching that there's a preference for local authority and local community. And that comes from this idea that we're known and loved in person. We're known and loved on a local level. The local authorities, the local, and that the primary, the fundamental unit of society is the family, right? That is the fundamental local authority. And beyond that, family to the community that's right around it as well. And so this really is, I think it is an important principle for a Christian.
Great.
We never read our quote.
We didn't. I think this would be a great place to do it too.
All right. You want to read it for us?
Sure, yeah. So this is a quote by GKKKK Chesterton. Yeah, Dylan put too many Ks on the Google Doc. Anyway.
My apologies.
Yeah, so I think this was referenced in our subsidiarity and solidarity episode. Is that right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is a quote by GK Chesterton again on small community. So here it is. The man who lives in a small community lives in a much larger world. He knows much more of the fierce variety and uncompromising divergences of men. In a large community, we can choose our companions. In a small community, our companions are chosen for us. Thus, in all extensive and highly civilized society, groups come into existence founded upon sympathy and shout out the real world more sharply than the gates of a monastery. There is nothing really narrow about the clan. The thing which is really narrow is the clique.
Wow. Yeah, just the first line there, the man who lives in a small community lives in a much larger world. It's paradoxical, but I think it's true, right? You live in a small community, you encounter people, you see, and this is something I think Chesterton talked about as well, is that in a small community, you actually see all kinds of people, right? When you encounter people locally, you find that a subset of the human population actually has a lot of diversity. I think when you encounter it and get to know it.
Yeah, great point. This seems to pierce the soul of our culture. It really does, doesn't it? Yeah, just this preference for the community that exists founded upon sympathy. It's really beautiful, isn't it?
Right. Well, it's like you can, you know, he says in a large community, we can choose our companions, right?
Yeah.
And I think in a globalized world, we can choose our companions. And I feel this in my life, right? Like because I can connect with people from so far away, I can choose who I surround myself with. And sometimes that makes people more like me. And, you know, you might actually end up in a less diverse community because it's a larger community.
Yeah.
In a small town, in a small community, in a small neighborhood, right? With less technology that connects you, you know, there's less opportunity to connect with people far away from you. And as a result, you can't choose who you spend time around as much. And that actually creates, ironically enough, more diversity and just, I think, more real experience of life.
Yeah. That's a beautiful quote. I have nothing to add.
Yeah, we can't top Gilbert. He's a master of words, a professional with the pen.
Indeed.
All right. So I think we established it's Catholic. What can we do about this? How can we live more locally?
Yeah, the one thing I touched on a few minutes ago is meeting your neighbors. That's just a very obvious thing. I think that I'm really recently coming into this world of having actual neighbors in an actual neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know,
just having moved into a house.
Yeah. I know growing up, my family, we were great friends with our neighbors, with most all of our neighbors. You know, people would, you know, our neighbors would come over and, you know, make us food just randomly. And we would, you know, talk across the street together, you know, and things like that, get together. So meeting your neighbors, I think, is a powerful way to live more locally, a very simple way and an obvious way. Jesus said this, you know, love your neighbor as yourself. I think I heard someone say once, like, could Jesus have meant actually your literal neighbor? You know, so I think we have a lot to learn from that. Just meet your neighbors, get to know them.
I don't know, it makes me think of a couple things. So one is like your neighbor, right? Who is your neighbor? That's Jesus was asked that question, who is your neighbor? And he tells the parable of the Good Samaritan, right? And so the moral there is that your neighbor is whoever needs you, right? Whoever you encounter that needs the presence of Christ, that needs love, needs to experience love from you. And so, you know, one of the things I put on our list is like encounter the homeless, because I think the homeless are our neighbors that we ignore sometimes. And one of the ways that I think of this, and, you know, I'm not a expert in homeless outreach necessarily, but one of the things I like to do is there's a couple spots that I know that not only that homeless people spend time, but it's often the same homeless people. And so one of the things I've tried to do is encounter the same homeless people. because it just becomes more personal, right? So I know one guy in particular who his name's Jerry, and you know, I've encountered a few times near my house, and you know, I can kind of check in on him, see if there's anything he needs, but that's in the context of a relationship, right? And it's not just a face of, you know, some, or, you know, just a random person walking by and throwing money at him or whatever, right? So I think that's an important thing. And I think especially in a globalized world, the homeless can get ignored even more. So that's one thing. And then I think of also like parish life. You talk about knowing your neighbors. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. Like I've been going to the same parish for a while now, and there's a lot of people who I've been meaning to, like, who I see at the same mass every time, sometimes sitting alone, right? And I've been meaning to reach out to and introduce myself. I just haven't. And I want to do better about that, because I think the parish is, you know, like the family, a fundamental unit of community in society. I think the parish is an important one too, for our life as Christians. And I think we need to do a better job of that. I think our parishes live this same lifestyle, right? You show up, you go to mass, and you leave, right? You're just there to pray, to do the liturgy, all that, and then you're out, right? You're not encountering people. And I think many of us do that. We don't actually encounter people in our parishes even.
Yeah, that's really great. I think, this is going to open up, I think, in another conversation, but I think a lot of times, and I've struggled with this as a parishioner, a parish hopper in the Huntsville community, mm-hmm. You know, what parish am I going to go to? I think about that from week to week, it seems like, but yeah, going to St. Mary's, where we both go now, has been, I've just been going these past few weeks, month or so, as I moved into the area. But I think I tend to think a lot of times of who's going to, like, I need to be served by this community. Who needs to reach out to me? What is this community, or what is this parish going to do for right. my holiness and my, right. you know, my needs, et cetera. Which is really the reverse of what we as Christians should mm-hmm. be operating as. So I think, being more local means serving the parish community. How can I serve the community? What can I do as a member of the parish to allow the parish to thrive more, grow more, to right. reach out to those members in the community?
Yeah, and I think we talk about like planting yourself at a parish and being involved there, and that's very important. Going to the same parish even, right? Very important. And also going just to the same places in general, going to the same bars and same restaurants, same businesses, right? Go to the same place to get your oil changed, right? Because then you can actually encounter people and develop relationships with people in the community, right? Develop working relationships where you can encounter these people, and that can eventually be even a opportunity for evangelization, right? Like, we talked about an evangelization, right? The episode we did on that. It all happens through relationships. If you're not forming relationships, long-term relationships, you're not really giving yourself a chance to encounter people and witness to them. So I think that's important too, is going to the same places even.
Yeah, as an example, I've been really desiring lately to find a barbershop that I'm comfortable at and that I want to go to. I think as a man, I feel like a lot of us desire that, to like go and to hang out at the barbershop and to
have a good barber.
Yeah, our barber to know everything that's going on with us and all that. And I recently found a place and really like the barber, and you know, I can, you know, get to know him from month to month and ask him how his girlfriend's doing and all that or whatever, you know. It's nice. Ask him about his interests. And, it's cool. Yeah, I really like that idea.
Right. And I think sometimes like we get, I don't know, I think of when I was in college, to go with the haircut thing. I remember I'd go to like Sports Clips, right? And have literally a different lady cut my hair every time. And it was, you know, it could be like exhausting. It's like, I got to like make more small talk while I'm getting my hair cut and like start over getting to know somebody who's not going to cut my hair again, maybe. Right. Like, versus like here, I get my hair cut by the lady who's cut my family's hair for like 30 years.
That's awesome. Wow.
And it's just, every time we always talk about baseball because she's a big baseball fan. But it's just like, it's less exhausting, right? I can just encounter this person. I know this person. I can let my guard down a little bit. So there's absolutely something to that.
Yeah.
And like another example, like, you know, taking, and this is, we'll get into, I think, living in your hometown and how that can be advantageous as well. But like, you know, I've gone to businesses and restaurants and just, I know the person working there from 10, 15 years ago. And it's like, even then it's like, okay, this is a, you know, a connection. This person knows me. I've gotten discounts places because I knew the person. The person's known my family for years, right? Yeah. So there's just little things like that where it's advantageous too.
Sure. Yeah, that's good. That's good.
So I think the other thing I want to talk about with how we can live more locally, I think you have one thing about kind of, you know, simplicity of lifestyle that I want to get to, but also I think simplicity of like technology. Because one of the things that when we're addressing this question of locality, and a lot of the problem is, you know, globalization and technology that makes us more globalized, right? You know, people who there's so many people who live in a city and they work remote, and the people they interact with don't even live where they live, right? And so I wonder if part of the solution is actually like becoming more digitally minimalist. Because I think a lot of the people I know that are localists in terms of, you know, they emphasize some of these themes and the way they live out their life are also digital minimalists. You know, I think of like Matt Frad, for example, who's somebody who's really big on this reestablishing local community, and he's doing some really intentional things about in Steubenville. Also a minimalist. You know, my brother PJ, who we've had on this show
right,
before,
yeah.
Also a minimalist, big localist, right? So I wonder if it's possible to do localism without also being somewhat minimalist digitally.
Yeah, that's a hard question. I think technology absolutely contributes to a movement away from localism. So the obvious thing would be to say we need to minimize technology.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I'm with you. I think there's value to that.
Yeah. Which is, I think there's a movement towards, I think in the next 10 to 20 years, I think there's going to be a lot more. There's already a lot of conversations about it. But I guess what about simplicity in general? What do you have to say about that?
Yeah, this is a thought that I haven't quite fleshed out yet. But I think one thing that I'm realizing in my own personal life is that when I have, I tend to have an overload of commitments, you know, things that I've committed to, and they're great things, right? That I may not be able to eliminate. Coaching, work, colloquium is an example. You know, I have other commitments that I have that I do throughout the week, and et cetera. Mm-hmm. I think just eliminating unnecessary commitments to things.
Like colloquium?
Yeah, like colloquium, exactly right. Yeah, this is our last episode.
Just kidding. No, he's lying. It's not.
Yeah, just as best you can, minimizing the number of commitments that you have so that you can put more time and energy into the relationships in your local community. That's something that I've been thinking about and trying to flesh out in my own life. But I think that could really help.
Yeah, I think so, right? You can, I don't know, it's like maximizing your time with the things and the people that matter most in order to increase your impact. I think that's definitely a huge thing.
Right.
So let's look at a little bit. So we obviously, we're both living this out or trying to live this out in our hometown. And I want to talk about a little bit about, I almost titled this at least, like why you should live in your hometown. But I want to pull back a little bit from that just because this isn't essential. It doesn't have to happen in your hometown. I think living where you grew up and living close to family and friends that you've known a while is huge. Sometimes that's your hometown. Sometimes that's maybe just another place that you have long-term connections with. But I think there's some things that we found, and I know I at least have found, about living where I grew up that's really helpful for living local community. So I want to talk about that. And I know you kind of brought up disadvantages too. So what are the advantages, maybe let's start with, of living where you have family or living where you grew up?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think I always had this perception. I know a lot of people did too growing up when we're thinking about where we're going to go to college and what we're going to do when we grow up and things like that. Especially in Huntsville, there seemed to be this movement away from Huntsville in everybody's minds. Like, hey, yeah. I want to go to a bigger city where there's more things right. happening and do this and do that. And honestly, I never really understood why people would want to stay in their hometown kind of growing up, you know, especially my parents are both from a really small town in Western Kentucky, not much going on there, not as many, near as many people as Huntsville. Mm-hmm. And there's a bunch of people that live there their whole lives. And I'm just like, why? Yeah. You could go somewhere else. Why aren't you going somewhere else? You know, so that is definitely something that I thought about growing up. So many advantages, though. It's a hard lesson. It is. But I think one of the things is, just the depth of relationship. You know, just people understanding you on a level that people in another place wouldn't. You know, little references here and there to places in Huntsville. Like the way that you interact with people in Huntsville is maybe a little different than other places that you already know about. Yeah. Just little things that add up and tend to create a depth that you can't get in other places.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's so true. I mean, we've talked about from time to time, like how our friendship even was founded on in some ways founded on small interactions that we had when we were young, right? Yeah. That established a relationship that we've been able to build on now, right? And there's a number of people in the local community that I've, you know, had like that. Your brother as well, right? Like if I didn't know your brother growing up or you, like, you know, would I be as close with either of you now? Probably not. Even if I were encountering you in the same environments and at church and all those things. But I don't know. I think of like, there's a stark contrast for me in my adult life, having lived like in Colorado, where I knew there was nobody in Colorado where I lived that had known me longer than a year or two.
Right.
Right. So there's nobody that knew my family. There's no, well, with the exception of my teammate Peyton, who happened to be my neighbor in Huntsville. That was a rare exception, right? That was a crazy coincidence. But other than that, like, I would meet somebody, they knew nothing about me, nothing about my family, nothing about where I grew up. And there was something disconnecting about that, where there were fewer opportunities to bond with people because of that. And then moving back here, it's like, oh, where'd you go to high school? It's like, oh, yeah, I know so-and-so. Like, there's just so many more opportunities to connect with people. And some of this, it doesn't have to necessarily be when you grow up. Because one of the things I think about, too, is in, like, you know, in marriage, right? When you get married, if you marry somebody who's not in your hometown, well, one of you is not going to be living in your hometown, right?
Right.
Like, so you can't always do this. But just living somewhere where you have connections, where you've spent a long period of time, and even if you can't live in the place you grew up, maybe it's just creating stability and living somewhere for a considerable period of time so that you can establish those connections and build on them.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. I think another thing too is, I'm kind of seeing this as some of my mentors in Huntsville get older, you know, the people that I knew growing up and I saw as like, you know, men of influence and, people that I admired and trusted, as they get older and I'm getting, you know, into like, my adulthood, I'm starting to see like that I am next, you know, like I'm next in line of serving the community.
Right.
It was, and really still is their turn. But as they move, you know, closer to the end of their time, I'm moving into my adulthood and kind of taking the role of being the leader and mentor and guide of people that are coming after me. So
is this in like coaching roles or in like
also in like in the parish community, you know, people that I admire in the parish community growing up are getting older, and you know, I'm in the place that they were in before when I was younger, and just this kind of like, it's my turn to give back, it's my turn to serve, you know, which I think is kind of a really powerful thing to see the progression of that over time.
Yeah. And I think that's important. This goes with one of my big things about giving back to the community that formed you, that I think that just is for whatever reason lost on society. You know, I think there is this big emphasis in, you know, our generation of millennials where it's like, okay, you can go to college and go do whatever you want, right? Go move wherever you want. College is going to open up all these doors, right? Then we all graduated in debt. I actually didn't, but you know what I mean? The millennial narrative, everybody graduates in debt, and it just wasn't that, you know, doesn't seem to be that dream that was promised. But where I'm going with that is that, you know, there seemed to be this emphasis on, you're not restricted to, you know, your hometown. You're not restricted to your neighborhood. You can go do and be whatever you want. And what I found is that it seems to come from that as a real neglect of like relationships that are important and neglect of giving back again to the community that formed you. And I experienced this. I remember when I was discerning coming back to Alabama, I was talking with a friend, Hokie, on the phone, and I was actually talking about this theme. It's like, you know, I feel like, you know, the church in the Diocese of Birmingham has given so much to me, right? Has nourished me and fed me in my faith and introduced the Lord to me. And here I am as a missionary in Colorado in a thriving diocese. And I'm not like giving back to this community at all, right? And they need it. You know, it's a missionary diocese still in Birmingham. And as in Hokie, I remember him saying to me on the phone, he's like, yeah, I think, Dylan, I think it sounds like you're called, you're really passionate about this, you're called to give back to your community for a time. And that was actually one of the things that pushed me over the edge in moving back here. And, you know, I don't know if I'll be here the rest of my life, but I know it's been a great, great opportunity to really give back. And I've told other people, because I've seen a lot of other missionaries and people who go off and be priests for other dioceses, and it's like, we need you. We need you here in this community I know is given to you. And I preach about this sometimes to people. I get preachy about it, but there's a need. There's a need, and there's things you can do because of the connections you have, because of those relationships that you already have that needs you. Yeah, the community needs you.
Great.
That was a rant. All right. And then the last thing, stability. I want to talk a little bit about the vow of stability with this. The Benedictines take a vow of stability, right? And this is, I think it's tough, and it's supposed to be tough, right? The Benedictines are somebody who, or they're a community that often, you know, they would have this tension, right, as a Benedictine. It's not, you don't live stability because it's perfect, right? Because you just never want to leave, right? I think the vow of stability is there because every now and then there's a temptation to go try something new. But there's a value to stability that helps us be present. And I think that we all can learn something from that Benedictine vow.
Yeah, I know one of your books from our last episode was Searching for and Maintaining Peace by Father Jacques Philippe. And I haven't read it, but the principle I think applies great here with stability is that we should work to maintain peace in our lives no matter what, because that's what Jesus asks of us as Christians. Mm-hmm. And it seems like stability really creates the soil for that. It really creates the soil for maintaining a kind of a peace-filled life, kind of the stability of routine, the stability of the people that you're around, the stability of the, you know, environment, the weather, every little thing that, you know, creates kind of a sort of familiarity in your surroundings. Just breeds peace, it seems to. Just getting up every day and kind of knowing what you're about and knowing sort of what to expect. I don't want to say that every day is going to be the same, but there's such a peace there, I think. One, in knowing what the Lord asks of you, and two, I think we're creatures of routine, of ritual, you know, and that seems to help us out a lot.
But it's hard at times, right? Because it can get monotonous. And so I think that's maybe the pushback, and I know we want to talk about disadvantages, but the pushback on this is it's like, okay, well, like, yeah, it does get boring. It can get boring and monotonous. And so how would you respond to somebody who says that?
I think that's actually getting into one of the disadvantages that maybe we can jump into right now. Complacency is definitely you said monotony, mm-hmm. that's a great word too, is definitely a temptation of being in one's hometown and being in a situation of familiarity. One, I would say, is your local community one that drives you out of complacency and comfortability? Do you have friends that push you towards to being the best versions of yourselves? You know, and one thing is to say, like, in local community, in some sense, you can't pick who you're around. You kind of have to be with people that you're in community with. But there's another sense in which you can. Right. You know, you can pick, you can, you know, choose your friends such that are going to help you grow and move towards the Lord and be the best version of yourself. So one, I would say to avoid that, pick friends, you know, that are going to keep you out of that rut.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because I think it's just because you've lived somewhere for a while and you're getting bored or complacent, it doesn't mean you're living locally, and it doesn't mean you're doing this well.
Right.
Amen. Right? So I think often that boredom that we experience is not because we're stuck in the same place, but because we're not actually going outside of ourselves and living fully alive in the community that we're formed in. And then I think we think that the solution is, oh, I need something new. I need the next thing. I need the next job. I need to try living somewhere else, right? I need to connect with these people in different places, right? When, you know, it's just like an evangelization. What you're called to, you're not necessarily called to go, not everyone's called to preach the gospel in Africa or in India or across the world, wherever it is, China. But the Lord's already placed people in our lives that I think a lot of times we live just kind of this complacent mediocrity with, yeah. And not challenging ourselves and not challenging them to go deeper. And I think, yeah, I think that's at the heart of it, is it's not necessarily stability that's the problem. And that's why stability is the important virtue, is that when we're tempted to move on to the next thing, stability reminds us that life is right in front of us, that the image of God is in the person right next to us.
Amen. Yeah.
I mean, it's the monks, right? The monks live with the same 10, 20 people, right? And that allows them, the stability allows them to just encounter those people deeper and deeper.
Yeah. I have so many thoughts on this. We could go on about this forever. I think a couple things. One is, like, I know I've been guilty of this in the past, but just putting your struggles with complacency on the community that you're a part of. Like, why is it their fault? You know, like, why is it the fault of people that are of your environment that you're complacent? That could be a contributing factor, but at the end of the day, that's probably not it, you guys. You know what I mean? That's probably not
right.
It. That's probably something in your own heart.
I mean, go back to our friend G.K. Chesterton, right? He has another quote that says, you know, when they asked him what's wrong with the world, he responded and said, I am.
Yeah.
Right? There's something fundamentally Christian about looking internally and realizing that the problem is in our own hearts, not in everyone else's heart.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I don't know if this relates, but I think in particular people like St. John of the Cross or Cardinal Von Thuan, a more modern figure who spent like extended periods of time imprisoned in a small cell with only themselves. You want to talk about a temptation to get complacent, to just sit there and with nothing to do and no one else. Like, you want to talk about a hostile environment to one's you know, becoming the best versions of themselves. But these are great men who decided that whatever situation they were in, they were going to praise God, they were going to serve God, they were going to become the best versions of ourselves, even in a small prison cell. So I would say, don't put your complacency or what you perceive to be your complacency on the community. That's probably not it.
That's a great point. You know, the other book by Jacques Philippe is Interior Freedom. Yeah. And he talks about people who, you know, are in a Nazi concentration camp and experience this profound freedom because they recognize, look, who I am, my interior life is not, believe it or not, not dependent on my external circumstances, right? But I can just be where I am and be present and still thrive, even under circumstances that might seem terrible.
Yeah. Right?
So I think that call to be present is an important reminder.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
So the other, this is an interesting objection. I want to treat this as like another like objection to living locally, right? Yeah. And this is, I'll let you introduce the quote because it's from the words of Christ and you added this, but from the gospel, a potential objection to living locally from Jesus himself. How do we go about this?
Yeah, this has always gave me pause. So this will be an interesting conversation, I think. Yeah. Here it is in Mark chapter 6, verse 4. Jesus said to the people of Nazareth, "A prophet is not without honor except in his native place and among his own kin and in his own house." End quote.
Wow. So is Jesus telling us not to go preach to our hometown?
Yeah, I think that would be a false interpretation because in this particular passage, he is in fact preaching to the people of Nazareth in his hometown. So, so I think that would be a false interpretation. Yeah, but in that passage, You know, it goes on to say Jesus was unable to work many miracles because of the people's lack of faith. You know, wow. They go on, hey, isn't this a carpenter? Isn't this a son of Joseph? Like, I didn't think he was, you know, an incredible prophet. I thought he was right. Just Joseph's son.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there does seem to be this like lack of belief because of them knowing Jesus from the beginning.
And his ministry seemed to be more fruitful outside of his home.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a great question. I'm not sure.
So, yeah, I think a lot of times this gets brought up in Focus, right? And sometimes it's like the idea, because a lot of people in Focus, you know, maybe they lived pagan lives growing up, and then they have a big conversion. And so there's this tension of like, oh, well, if I go preach to my hometown, like they just see me as this, you know, immature kid or this non-religious person, and they're going to think I'm fake, whatever. That wasn't the case with Jesus, right? Because Jesus was holy when he was a kid. He was God. He was sinless, right? But I think it's something like, it has something to do with, I don't know, I think we can all relate to this. Like, if you ever try to preach to your family, it can be tough. It's just, I think it's hard for them to receive. And so I think maybe that's somewhat what happened with Jesus, is it's like, you know, who are you? You're this kid, you know, we know you, we know your parents, right? Like who are you to tell us this? And that may be true, with your hometown, but, I don't know. I think it's getting at that reality, right? Of the difficulty of, just family who knows you well, right? And, close friends and close community, and sometimes the difficulty of them, accepting, especially when you go off, right? Jesus went off and he was an itinerant preacher, and then he comes back to his hometown, right? And it's like, who are you to come back here? So I don't know that this is speaking directly into our situation, but it's hard to know what to do with.
Yeah. Well, I think the thrust of this quote here too from Jesus is he doesn't say anything about whether or not you should preach to your hometown. He simply says, you're probably going to be without honor in your own native place.
And maybe that's a good thing.
Maybe that is. Yeah, because, I mean, honor is a good thing, but we don't seek it as the highest good as Christians, you know. So maybe, you know, serving the little community, you know, serving your hometown is something that you're called to do.
But it's not going to bring you honor.
But it's not going to bring you honor. Yeah, you're not going to be put up on a pedestal as a great prophet or man or woman or whatever, which is fine. That's not what you're called to.
Yeah, that's a great point. I'm not going to add anything to that because I think you hit a slam dunk right there to mix my metaphors.
I can't jump that high, but thank you.
I can.
Dylan can, everyone.
Okay. Well, I haven't done it in a while, but once upon a time. Okay. That's a good point. I was a little worried. I thought this was going to undermine our argument.
Well,
but
I don't know. Next. No, I'm kidding.
I think this does get missed. This quote gets misapplied.
It definitely does.
I think when I've heard it in Focus, it's like, oh, well, you shouldn't go preach in your hometown because they're not going to accept you. It's like, I don't think that's what Jesus is saying. Because like you said, he did preach in his hometown.
Yeah, that would be the example I would give. Yes, he did.
All right, what else?
Maybe I'll share this quote from Charles Dickens here. Charles Dickens is always good for a nice one-liner. Chucky Dickens. There we go. Yeah. Okay.
C.K. Dickens.
Oh, no. But, yeah, this is from Great Expectations. I've read quite a bit of Great Expectations recently, and it's just a masterwork, just like all of his stuff. But he's speaking about one of the main characters in this novel, Joe Gargery, who's a blacksmith and lives in this very small town. He's the main character's sort of father figure. And, you know, he goes about his day, does the same thing every day, serves his wife, who is, you know, very disagreeable as a wife, goes to the same bar, sees the same five people, all this. And Dickens says this about him. It is not possible to know how far the influence of any amiable, honest heart, duty-doing man flies out into the world. So the gist of that thought is that doing one's duty, being honest, dare I say, being in the local community has a very wide reach influentially.
Right. Yeah. I think of the, you know, the honest man, right? Maybe it's like St. Joseph comes to mind, right? Just the carpenter, goes about his business, loves his family, works hard. I know a lot of people, like in our parents' generation, this isn't a millennial thing, but a lot of baby boomers just work the same job for 35, 40 years and give themselves to that work that they do, give themselves to their family and their community. And it's a simple, it's an ordinary life, but there's a lot of beauty and a lot of honor in that.
Amen.
And that's what that makes me think of.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one thing I would say about that is I know in my life, I've thought of success or holiness or, you know, doing what I was supposed to do as like St. Augustine or Thomas Aquinas or John Paul II or, you know, other figures like Abe Lincoln or, you know, I've thought about them as the, you know, kind of the best example of what success or what being a good human being looks like. And that was their call. And don't get me wrong, those were great men, great men who did what they were called to do. But that the majority of us are not called to that sort of fame and that sort of, you know, honor or whatever it is. You know, the majority of us are called to what we're talking about here, this duty doing day by day, investing deeply in the local community. Yeah.
I believe that some of the greatest saints in heaven are going to be monks and nuns and fathers and mothers and sisters and brothers that we've never heard of, who've lived in small towns, gone about their business, loved the Lord and loved their neighbor diligently, and never become famous, never been known outside of their local community. And so I think that, you know, in the globalized world, you know, where it's, you know, everybody wants to become a TikTok star and get, I don't want to be a TikTok star, but you know what I mean, right? Like everybody wants to go viral, right? How are you going viral in your heart? That was a terrible
idea. Oh, you said it now.
I was trying to think of like a way to like really pack a punch with,
you're right. You're exactly right. What the TikTok thing is like it's a breadth of fame. Like, I think honestly, Services says it best. To be quite honest, in their song Surfaces, Famous, Services, band. The band, they have this song called Famous, and the chorus goes, "I don't want to be famous. Money and cars only fade away. I don't want to be famous. I want to be noticed by you." Wow, it's beautiful. I could be known, quote unquote, by all of these people, millions of people across the world, but to be known is really in the context of the local community, and really in the eyes of the Lord, of course, but or in our relationship with the Lord. But
yeah, I think of like, and maybe this is the last thing I'll say because we probably got to wrap up, but makes me think of vocation, right? I'd say with the exception of like specific missionary priests, vocations are local. Right? Vocation stabilizes you and roots you in a community. If you're a religious brother or sister, priest, that's what it's going to do. If you're a married man or woman, that's what it's going to do. Right? So I'd say this non-stability is the exception in vocations, but vocations are naturally a very stabilizing thing.
Amen.
Stabilizing. All right. Well, let's wrap up. Any parting thoughts for, if you could tell somebody one thing, how you could live locally more, what would your advice be?
I would say for the younger folks that listen to our podcast that are deciding what it is that they want to do or where it is that they want to move, et cetera, consider your local community, consider your hometown. Don't cast it off as being not the place for you just because it's familiar. There is value and depth and excitement to living a life in your local community.
I'm glad you said that, because that might have been mine, but I'll say one different just to add to it. And I'm gonna go with minimize your technology. Minimize your technology, leave it at that. Spend less time on your phone, spend less time on social media, and go encounter the people directly around you. All right, this has been our show, colloquiumshow@gmail.com. Love to hear your questions. Find us on Instagram, Facebook, and wherever you get your podcasts. Praise be Jesus Christ.
Now and forever.
Amen.